Welcome to another episode of the Growth Focus podcast, where we bring together tech leaders from all across the globe to share their time, their insights, and their business expertise to help you grow your business. My name is Gary Lafferty, your host and creator of the Growth Focus Partnerships, where we help tech founders build better relationships, stronger relationships, close bigger deals, and be seen and heard as the number one authority in their field. On this episode, we're going to be talking about pivoting. We're going to be talking about growth from Silicon Valley. We're going to be talking about how do you take what you have in mind and grow it to a point where you not only can have one exit, but potentially several exits. So if you are anywhere in there or you are just interested to see what our guest has got today, make sure you stick around because we've got such a great episode. So that being said, without further ado, Cans, it's absolutely an honor and a pleasure to have you on our show today. Why don't you start off by introducing yourself and tell us what you do?
Thanks so much for having me, Gary. Michael Canzoneri. I've been going by Cans since the first day of first grade. So if you're watching this and you know me personally, you know the story because I've talked about it many times. I am right now the co-founder of Data Squirrel, which is a neuromorphic sticks in my head because I've been reading about it so much, which is a new type of architecture. It's a neurosymbolic data platform, and it sounds really academic and really high tech, and it is, but in simple terms, it is the connective tissue between AI and data. And a lot of people are like, hey, you know, doesn't AI already have the data? Not really. So it's a really challenging thing. And so I joined my co-founder about a year and a half ago on this journey. And it was just what I was looking for after I took my second semi-retirement. Because I've pivoted a lot in my career and purposely so.
Well, we're looking forward to delving deep into that and to your history. So let's dial it back so people get to know you a little bit more. You've had a fascinating path, Cans. You know, you're from Oracle certified everything to Silicon Valley unicorns to co-founding, as you say, Data Squirrel. So looking back at your vast career, what patterns or decisions helped you accelerate that sort of growth journey the most?
A rather personal one, fear, which I think if you talk to a lot of people and you can reduce a lot of things, I think, to running from pain or running to pleasure. Mm. And I've been very fortunate in my career. I have a wonderful life. Throughout my career, I basically said, I want to do something that pays the bills, but is also something really interesting to me. And I don't want to be stuck doing something that I find really boring, because what I have found about myself is when I'm very bored or when I'm shackled, I like to say, I become a sub-average player.
Interesting.
Yeah. And the fear part really comes in from that. But also, I tell this all the time, I was couch surfing for about a year and a half in college. I was quasi-homeless. My dad started a business. We had a nice house in the Pocono Mountains in Northeast Pennsylvania. And about right as I started college, the business took a nosedive, and before I knew it, we lost the house. So I was staying with girlfriends, staying at my school. For some reason, I was able to get through Penn State. So that fear, whether it's good or bad, is a motivation. So I keep constantly look at how do I keep myself employed, but also do something that really brings out the best in me.
Yeah, that is a really great way of looking at things. And I'll just dial it back again a little bit where you said, you know, we always have fear, the motivation of running towards fear or running towards pleasure, or running away from the pain. But this is one of the things we know when you and I have spoken before, Cairns, we've talked about this. One of the challenges that we see with especially founders, you know, they've got a great vision, they're running towards this pleasure. But what tends to hold them back usually is the shackles of the pain. They realize they shouldn't be in there. They realize that's probably a path they should no longer be on, but they're shackled to it. And as much as they want to move towards the pleasure, move towards the new journey, they get stuck with these shackles. What insights have you got that you could share with us in order for these founders to say, right, maybe I am on the wrong path and I do want this new place? What advice can you give them?
Yeah, I'm actually I'm doing a little mini series podcast about this very topic that I think is really important for entrepreneurs and people in general, and it's mentorship. Find somebody who is going to mentor you in the right way. And that person, and one of the things I talk about quite often is you can have multiple different types of mentors, but one of them that you need is the pessimist. and someone who could tell you, oh, that's not going to work. Or you also need somebody who is going to be very truthful with you because they care about you.
Do you know what? My dad was that. It's so true. And I've got coaches and I mentor people and I've been mentoring people for years and I have multiple coaches. But my dad was the first one. He was almost like the sounding board. I'll take it to him first. And he would always be the pessimist, the forever pessimist. This guy was a major volunteer within, but he'd rather volunteer his time than build something, you know, but he always, he was looking after people all the time. But he would find and pick holes in everything, which was good because it meant I always had to fight to make sure I had the right foundations and I was heading in the right direction.
Yeah, I have the two Toms. I have one of my very first bosses, who I'm still very good friends with, Tom Connolly. He built and sold several businesses. He taught me when I came out of school, like how to run a business. I was employee number three at his consulting firm, and he taught me how to do everything. Between the time I left Penn State and I went to Villanova, and I went to Villanova because of him for my MBA. My MBA was so meaningful because when I was taking classes, I'm like, oh, that's why Tom told me to do that. Well, that's why Tom told me to do that. And that's why Tom yelled at me about that. So that's the one Tom. The other Tom is somebody I worked with over the last 10 years. And he's very much a realist. And he has also a psychology background, even though he works in tech. So he doesn't sugarcoat it for me. And he kind of tells me like it is. And he's very good at pointing out my faults, but in a loving way, of course, in a very supportive way. He's like, you know, it's like cans. He's like, you don't do that well. You know, you don't do that well. Don't do that. So I talk to Tom number two almost every week. Like I talked to him this morning. I tell him what's going on. And I just say, Tom, here's what's going on. What do you think? And I get his unvarnished opinion about it. And so if I'm stuck, going back to your original question, if I'm stuck, I'll say, here's what I'm seeing. And he's really great because, and this is what a really great mentor will do for you, I think. They'll say, yeah, it's screwed up, but one, did you learn from it? Which is really important. And two, let's talk about some ways to get out of it. And one of the more important things Tom has also taught me, Tom number two and Tom number one especially, is, and it's really hard for a lot of people, especially hard for me for many number of years, is to remove your ego from it. Because your business might be failing, you're not failing. It's the business.
Yeah. It's the asset. It's something different. Yeah. It's not you.
Yeah.
And John, this is a great segue into the next question I've got for you, actually, talking about stagnation, talking about, you know, getting a bit stuck. You've seen both hypergrowth and plateaus firsthand. Yeah. So what do you think causes the most promising tech companies out there to suddenly stagnate after this initial burst of success?
Yeah, I've seen it happen a few times. The first time I saw it firsthand in a unicorn was, it was with DataStax. And we were really on a rocket ship. And I think what happened there is DataStax made a decision to kind of, the best way I could put it is they had an argument with the Apache Software Foundation. And it was very public. And at the same time, the leadership was kind of pivoting from the user, so to speak, to the executive. They wanted to kind of get higher in the account, as a lot of software reps will talk about. They want to talk to the C-suite. They want to talk to the VP. They want to talk to the line of business owner. And that's all good. That's great. If you can talk about the value your software brings to a company, your product brings to a customer, that's great. But what I think was happening there, and they didn't realize, is it's a very technical product. And the C-suite, they don't understand the technology piece. They understand they have to pay for it. And they understand sometimes the value they get out of it, but they don't care about the bells and whistles and the theory behind it. So it was almost like as if they abandoned their core customer, which was the developer. And I think a lot of times you have to really take the perspective of, especially with software companies, a lot of times I like, look at the cool problem we solve. And not that what the customer is really thinking is, they're thinking more of a higher level, if you will. Like, don't make a better database, make a better database user. Like, don't make better data, make people better at using the data to get information.
That's a really interesting point, because I know when you and I have been talking before, Kans, you mentioned the value of telling the how. All right. It was the absolute how, the battle, you know, the battle stories of this is what we do. This is why we do it. This is the core reason. This is why it's going to suit you. This is why it's perfect for you. How do you use storytelling in business today to cut through the noise and engage potential buyers and partners, you know, and stand above what everyone else is saying?
Yeah. Yeah. I always use Simon Sinek's three circles, the golden circles, why, what, and how. And when I'm telling a story, I really try to focus it on why first and tell that. But what I've often found is what is it is a really good way to start. What is the problem? What is the pain I'm trying to solve for you? And by the way, I always mess this up as well. This is 20 something years into my career. I've presented to thousands of people in front of several thousand people many times. For sales kickoffs and what have you, and company kickoffs. And I still mess it up all the time. And I think a lot of times because I overthink it personally. So what I really try to boil it down to is you're out there, you're in my audience. What am I trying to solve for you? What problem do you have that maybe I can impart some battle scar upon you that I have earned? So I try to start with the pain. It almost sounds like I'm very negative person. I'm not, because I'm talking about fear and pain, but I'm really not a negative person. If you spend some time with me, very jovial, I like to think. But a lot of people, from my experience, a few things. One, and I think this is the most important thing, they just want to be heard. As silly as that may sound to a lot of people, they just want to be heard. So they're looking, when I'm trying to present to somebody, tell a story about something, a problem I'm trying to solve for them, I'm really trying to think about if I can get how I tell you your pain correctly, you then feel validated and will listen to me. And then if I can do that, I can also come in over the top with battle stories, really. Like, this is how I did it. And this is why I did it the way I did it. And this is, you know, the outcome. So that what I'm really doing is I'm hopefully validating what they're feeling, what they're experiencing, and making them feel heard because of that. And then saying, hey, I was there also. This is what I did. And this is the outcome. And that part is just authenticity. So I try to marry those two things when I'm when I'm presenting. I don't always do it well. I often overthink it, but
it is one of those things to get really hard. But yeah, to meet, you know, the old adage in marketing, in order to, is to meet them where they're at, you know? And
right.
So if you want to get somebody on your side or to see your point of view, first and foremost, you don't want to bring them to you. You want to go to them. You want to go to where their pains are.
Right.
Their challenges, their issues, their bleeding neck problem, and say, right, I understand that. And then associate, I've been there. I've been there before. I know about it. And this is where the authority-led marketing, we're going to get onto this in a minute, but authority-led marketing, this is the reason why I built this, why I structured this. Is my product, this is my service, because of that. And then how to actually use it. So there's a whole story building up behind it. So it's not just commoditized. And I think that we hear a lot of product, of tech and service and what of it's just come to commoditize. And that's because there's no story behind it.
Yeah.
It is what it is.
I'll tell you how I relay why it is I do Data Squirrel. And I think I tell people all the time, this is going to sound cheesy. However, I believe that you are drowning in data, but starving for information. So if that is kind of your core belief, how you design, deliver the product, which is Data Squirrel, is, you know, following that, you're going to meet the customer where they're at. So we have this really complex, underneath the covers, it's a really complex product, but we add a lot of things for the user to make sure we meet them where they're at. So they have a different user experience. To your point, everyone can have an editor. Everyone can have an IDE. But what is it that's going to make the customer say, that's going to make my life easy?
Yeah, that's a really good point.
Yeah, that's
it's helping them. It's just helping their life or their business easier. Where we've seen success, definitely, and probably you've seen the same now. One of the elements of success is not product or service driven. It's almost hybrid partnerships. It's how do I help you with your problem? How do I help you get to your goals, grow your company, or whatever the case may be? That hybrid partnership, even though there's a product and service attached to it, it's not product and service led.
Yeah, I think if you look at almost all of the really big software companies out there, and some of the mid-sized ones as well, go to the website, go to solutions or where it says solutions or use cases, they will have almost all the same identical ones. And nothing beyond this is the problem. Maybe a little bit around this is how you solve it. And that really is commoditized. I think about the streaming market, the streaming data market, very much so, because it's real-time data. It's very tough. That's an engineering problem that a lot of people have not cracked, even though it's available. And you look at anyone who's doing streaming or anyone who's doing AI, look at anyone who's doing AI and just compare a few different vendors. It looks all the same. And you're not going to get traction with them unless you can say, that's your problem. I think we could solve it, but here's how I'm thinking about it. Is that right? And kind of meshing to that partnership. That's where I've seen, and that's been really hard because I'm taking more of a partnership, relationship-led path to growth in many respects.
Well, that's an interesting thing to talk about growth. I know that you are still personally showing up. You know, this is what you do. You're personally showing up as a founder to drive growth within the company. Can you describe how your day in the trenches are? What's a typical day in the trenches for you when it comes to marketing and sales conversations?
Yeah. It's a lot of learning. I often joke that undergrad at Penn State, MBA at Villanova, graduate work in AI and data science at Harvard, and graduate work at MIT in quantum computing. And I feel dumb every day. That's a good thing, I think, because I'm learning about areas that I really didn't have to bother with in many ways, shapes, and forms before. For instance, what does inbound lead generation look like? What does that whole process look like? And, you know, learning that and calling on some friends to help me and not being afraid to say, hey, I'm an idiot, help me here. So a lot of it is me just learning how to do things a better way. A lot of it is the quote unquote grind of messaging people, calling people, following up with people. It's a lot of no and trying to detach that from, you know, not, you know, being personally offended by that. Mm. So it's a lot of get your teeth kicked in and just, you know, got to do it again tomorrow. That's
exactly. You know, exactly. This is the key thing, isn't it? It's about the repetition. It's about showing up. It's making sure. There'll be people listening to this or watching this and going, well, this is always one thing I hated with sales and marketing. You know, I'm a tech guy or I'm a tech girl. And this is what I set up. You can't be the best kept secret. You've got to make sure you get out there and be seen and heard. But more importantly, be seen and heard as different to everybody else. And I know that you've said this before. You've said being an expert isn't enough anymore. No. You can't just be there. So you have to be the authority. What does being seen as the authority look like to you in 2025?
Battle scores. It's the same. It really is the same. I could tell you, I tell people stories from all across my career. You know, when I was at Confluent, the Apache Kafka company, when I was at Gartner, I did a lot of really interesting work at Gartner. Even though it's 15 years ago, I learned a lot of different things there where I do a lot of storytelling with that. So a lot of it is just being able to share these stories that are relatable to everyone. And also being kind of vulnerable and saying, I didn't know this at the time, or I didn't know that. And here's how I messed up. And you know, I'm sharing this with you. And a lot of times when I talk to customers, just people in general, what I'll say is, I often say to them first, may I offer you some advice? Because what I find is everyone will try to give you advice. And a lot of times you're not asking people for advice. You just want to vent.
So that's an interesting way of looking at it.
Yeah. I just want to, again, it's that being heard, right? I want to be heard. So I would say to them, well, I hear this is your problem. May I offer you some advice? And when I kind of face something very similar. Because if not, you almost kind of sound like your best way I could put this is being that pain in the butt relative at Thanksgiving dinner, right? Like I didn't ask
you. There is this tendency, Kaz, you're asking, there is this tendency for tech people to come across as the most intelligent person in the room. They always want to be, they want to come across and say, yes, I know more than that. This is what I do. But you mentioned that word earlier today, authenticity. And I think a lot of authority, being an authority is something that beholds upon you. You can call yourself an expert, but being an authority is what others behold upon you.
Right.
It's how they see you. Yeah. And by trying to be and prove that you're the most cleverest person in the room, proves you're an expert, but doesn't prove you're the authority in that room. Yeah. And I love what you said about it's those battle scar stories, because there's going to be people listening to this. And because I know it's just the tech industry, you know, tech, engineering, accounting, very, very simple. They don't want to be the limelight. So they'd rather be data fed, you know, and say, let me give you the analytical side of it, as opposed to the emotional human side of it, which is what you're very strong on. So let me tell you all my story. You've got a bank of stories, haven't you? You can tell from your college, through everything, through Gartner, your exits. You've got all of those stories, but you did mention vulnerability. And I think this is one of the key things to build authenticity and to be shown as an authority, is that you've earned your way there through the battle scars and the mistakes that you did and had going to the point you are today.
Yeah, and one of the best ways you could share your authenticity and show your vulnerability at the same time is when you say, I had this wonderful solution engineer I worked with years ago, who has since passed away, a wonderful man named Tom Valley. It's often when you're a salesperson or in sales mode that you want to say yes to everything. For a number of reasons. You want to make the sale, you're desperate, you're a people pleaser like me. And Tom was really good at saying, that's not something we do. I do this. I do this really well. This other vendor is probably better fit for you there. Mm-hmm. It shows a lot of things, I think. It shows that you're really listening to them. Again, you're hearing them. You're validating them. But it also it shows that you're being truthful as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're not trying to please everybody. You'll please no one that way, you know. But if you stand your ground, you know what it is that you do, you know what your wheelhouse is,
yeah,
and become known for that. That is when you can go leaps and bounds, you know, with that authority-led marketing, authority-led messaging. And while I'm on this, I mean, it doesn't matter. Everybody in tech who's listening and watching this knows there is still an element of founder-led sales. It doesn't matter if it's 1 million, yeah. 5 million, 10 million, 20 million. Yeah. There's this strong element of founder-led sales somewhere along those lines. However, what I've always found most challenging was that when it comes to founder-led marketing, founders tend to kick that to the side as quickly as they possibly can. They kick it to a marketing department. They kick it to a marketing agency rather than sharing their story, their why, and their how. How has founder-led marketing shaped the trajectory of your ventures, would you say?
I'm in the midst of this right now. And with the prior versions of our product, it's very technical, but I really couldn't find a very succinct way to describe what it is we do. I like making things very simple. And I could tell you exactly what the product does, of course. But I think what I'm finding doing this founder-led marketing is I don't know a lot of things. And I reach out to people just to say, hey, here's what I'm thinking. Am I right? So it's kind of demoralizing because the people I reach out to, they know me, they've worked with me. They know I want their honest answer. And they will tell me that it sucks.
Yeah, so, vulnerability is a great way to learn. It really is. Humbleness and vulnerability. Well, it's a great way to grow because you are getting people. I mean, one of the people that I admire most, Sir Richard Branson, you know, he was famously saying, you know, I don't know a lot about anything, but I have a team around me who know an awful lot more that get me there. And it's those lessons that where you can learn from other people within your team. And you still be the voice of it. You still be the why, because no one could tell your story,
right?
And your reasoning and your mission and your passion better than you. And sharing that as to why you joined, why you came in, why you started, why you created are so important in today's world to stand out above the crowd.
Yeah. People buy you before they buy a product.
Yeah. Yeah.
100%.
And again, it's one of those common sense things, which is not necessarily common practice. Yeah. All right. People have heard that so many times. People will buy the person before the product or the service. And we all know it.
Yeah.
But not many people practice it. They try and push the product forward. They push the service forward and try and stand behind and think, yeah, the field of dreams. If I build it, they will come because it's brilliant. And it doesn't, not in today's world. It's too noisy.
Yeah. We've gotten a lot of traction. Again, you know, in the market, the way it's been with the uncertainty in the economy and the recent election, the traction that we seem to be getting the most is with people who I just spent time with, just talking and getting to know them. Luckily, you know, through those connections and through those chats, and, you know, it takes a lot, of course. You have to be patient. They're like, I have a problem and I know you can solve it. Let me help you. And in turn, you're going to help me. I'm going through that right now with several customers who we're bringing on board. That's why, you know, I I take the time to actually sit down with people and talk, because I know it may not pay off ever. It just might be a great relationship I develop at some point. But more often than not, one of the most interesting things I've found over my career is that if you say to somebody, please help me, they will help you.
Yes. I found that tremendously uplifting probably 15 years ago, 20 years ago, when I was looking for help, when I was building my company, and I was almost afraid to approach people more successful than me. And I thought, I have to earn the right first. But I was absolutely surprised when one of my mentors, who became my mentor, said, the whole point of me being above here is that I can reach down and help you.
Right.
But all I ask for in return is, once I've helped you, you do the same, and you reach down and you help someone else up. And yes, they will come up. And if you ask, they will help. And I'm a great believer in, don't be shy in asking for help. You know, no matter how successful you are at the moment, there are other people more successful than you that you could learn from.
Yeah. You know, people that I talk to often about this, they often kind of think there's this barrier between, okay, I'm up here and why would I, you know, associate with somebody down there? I'm like, well, that's how you pay it back. That's how you pay it back, and that's how you pay it forward. So that's why I spend a lot of time just mentoring young men. And I think, you know, part of the thing I've been finding a lot is young men seem to be struggling finding mentors for whatever reason it may be. And I find the same with young women, but young men seem to search me out more. And I mentor both men and women, but the majority have been just young men, thankfully reaching out saying, hey, it was nice meeting you at this event. I'd love to spend more time with you if that's possible. And I tell them constantly, absolutely. You know, I'm here. I'm happy to talk. I'm happy to, you know, walk through some things and talk to you. I'm happy to, you know, spend an hour a week or 2 hours a week with you. And people, I know a lot of people on the internet and these, I call it that grind hustle culture you see on YouTube and Instagram and so on. They talk about being so guarded with your time. Mm-hmm. Well, if you really want to give back and you really want to help people, the greatest thing you can give is your time.
Yeah, so absolutely.
So
yeah, very, very, very well said. And, you know, I'm glad you said that. And I'm glad you said that here, because people can actually begin to hear it now, that there is no shame in asking. You know, you just need to go and find and go and ask. And like everything else, they might say no, but you'll always get a no if you don't ask.
That's right.
So, you've got to get out there and ask. So this leads me to probably the last loaded question I have for you, Cam, today. It's like, throughout your very, very colorful career, very, very successful career, if you could go back and give young Cam one piece of advice about being successful today. Young Cam could be any age. It doesn't really matter. But you're just looking, you're embracing everything you've taken on board today on your shoulders. And you turn around to young Cam and say, look, I've got one piece of advice for you when it comes to success. What would that piece of advice be?
It's going to be something you've never heard before.
Okay.
Start journaling every day. I started maybe, I want to say 10 to 15 years ago, but in earnest about 10 years ago, every day. Literally, as a matter of fact, you can see that. This is my journal. Every morning, 10 minutes.
Mm.
And other people say other things, I know, and they're all right, I think. But this is something different that I share with a lot of people is, I was in many ways still am just egotistical, like most people, I think, very egocentric. One of the biggest complaints I got from one of my old bosses, who was a great guy, we just, you know, butted heads a lot, and rightfully so, I was wrong.
Mm.
He was right, I was wrong, was basically my lack of self-awareness. And I like to think I turned that around a good bit from feedback I've gotten from people. And it's all due to the fact that for 10 minutes every morning, I sit down and I just kind of brain dump. I don't need, you know, something to journal about. I'm just like, I'm eating eggs this morning. And from there, for 10 minutes on my laptop has a timer on it, I just write. This morning, I'll share this one little funny thing. This morning, my son, who is 9 and autistic, was playing with my wallet, and out dropped, I don't know if you could see that, a pick and a ticket. The pick is from Robert Trujillo from Metallica, when I was in the front row of a concert in Hollywood, Florida on November 4th, 2021. I left it in there, and I wrote about it previously, but I never got it, got the pick in there. And the ticket is from the very first a concert or very first event period at the Chase Center in San Francisco. And it was another Metallica conference concert for SNM2, that album that became SNM2. Journal every day. And it reminds you of a number of things. It reminds you of things you've done. It helps you see a different perspective. Remember, I was talking about looking at the solution versus the product, and the problem versus the product, and kind of stepping away from your product and seeing the actual solution. It does this, the very same thing for you in many different ways. So I think if I were to go back in time and say one thing to my younger self, it would be develop that habit of journaling much sooner. Because it will help you in a multitude of ways.
Well, I could, as a journaler, I was very late to journaling. I didn't start journaling until I was in my 40s. And my wife made sure I actually did it. And, you know, we sit down every morning and we actually journalize it. And like you said, most of the time, I don't know what I'm writing. I really don't know what I'm writing. And I'm like, stare at it, boom. But you just got to start somewhere. I went, wow, this coffee's hot today. And then boom. And then you're off there again, you right?
Yeah.
And I love the fact that one of the benefits is that you, for me at least, is that I begin to become more grateful for what I have. Okay. When I can see not just work, not just clients, just grateful for the morning, right? And grateful for I can have time to work out. It's just silly little things. But it just breaks that monotony of being burnt out, you know?
That's it. I typically, within that entry every day, I have something I'm grateful for. And I kind of make notes as well. I almost index the journal and saying, you know, today I learned this, and I'll make a little entry in the back of the book on, I learned this, I traveled here, this happened. So I have like events, learnings, quotes I find that are really interesting. I kind of collect them. And like, for instance, at the end of the year, I look back at the year and say, okay, how many things did I learn? How many events transpired? How many times did I travel? Like last year, I traveled over 27 times. Just be grateful for the fact that I can say that, and all the fun places I've been over the last year, just alone. It's amazing. Yeah.
And it's just, I say, that's what I said. It's looking back, because we get so busy being busy that we just forget to look back and look at the stuff we've actually achieved personally, as a person, as a human being, as a man, as a woman, you know, just as opposed to the entrepreneur, as a founder, as a boss, you know, it's who we actually are. Well, I think, Cans, look, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on today.
Same here.
You've shared so much today, and I'm really, really, really honored to have had you here today. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much for having me, Gary.
If people want to get hold of you, what's the best way of getting hold of you, Cans?
LinkedIn is probably the best way. You can find me, my name right there, Michael Cans, Canzoneri. There's only about four Canses or Mike Canses in the world, four or five. I know several of them. I can tell you there's a general, there's a lawyer in Long Island, and there's a software guy in Buffalo, New York, who I used to get his mail a good bit.
Well, I'll make sure your LinkedIn is in the show notes. You know, and as a side note, there is a Gary Lafty, although I'm in the States, there's a Gary Lafty in the UK. And would you believe it? He is the European line dancing champion. It's definitely not me. Well, guys, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much for being on the show today. It's been absolutely great. And ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us for yet another episode of the Growth Focus podcast. And as always, no doubt you have taken notes. You have had some real great sort of blashes of the obvious and thinking, wow, great insight. Write it down, please. But more than ever, make sure you take action on them. There's no point just taking knowledge in. Knowledge is not power until you take action. If you've learned something from Cans today, make sure you share it. Make sure you take action on it. But more importantly, make sure you share the episode so that everybody can learn from leaders like Cans and the others on this show. So until next time, keep being positive, keep striving, and more importantly, be profitable. See you later to the next episode. Bye-bye.